No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 51 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes on The Commentist Network at thecommentist.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, all we will be doing is an in-depth review of Unlocking the Cage, the newest film from directors D.A. Pennebaker and Chris Hegedus.
That's right. No announcements, no news, no food talk. We're going straight to the movies today. So
Andy and I literally just got back from watching this movie. We went to this cool little independent theater called Real Artways.
We're cool guys.
Giving them a little shout out.
We're independent, but Paul still refused to buy a membership to support them because he wants them to close down.
As awkward as Andy made it. we went to this. We literally just got back. It's tough to not talk about the film on the drive home when we're just sitting next to each other. So I had to make awkward small talk with Andy, something he absolutely hates to do. But we somehow made it back. So now we can finally, now that we're being recorded, we can finally talk about this movie.
Well, to be fair, Paul, I am the one that brought up the pleasant humidity level.
Yes, just so everyone knows, Andy thought that it was pleasantly humid outside.
Yeah. All right, so without further ado, let's get to our review of Unlocking the Cage.
These animals are extraordinarily cognitively complex. So when you imprison a chimpanzee, the chimpanzee understands that tomorrow he's going to be in prison. And as far as he knows, it's not going to end. What we're trying to do is change the way people view non-human animals. Because right now, it's, are you a human? You have rights. You're not a human, you don't. And we're saying that's wrong.
Now to a bizarre lawsuit with big implications, and the key question is whether a chimp is a person.
Tommy is a legal thing right now and has a right to get out of being held for his entire life in a cage.
When I began, people laughed at me and they barked when I went into a courtroom.
They are not human beings, and putting them on the same legal standing as a human being, that's insanity.
All right, the plot synopsis from IMDb. Unlocking the Cage follows animal rights lawyer Stephen Wise in his unprecedented challenge to break down the legal wall that separates animals from humans, arguing that cognitively complex animals such as chimpanzees, whales, dolphins, and elephants have the capacity for limited personhood rights. Steve and his legal team are making history by filing the first lawsuits that seek to transform a chimpanzee from a thing with no rights to a person with legal protections. So, Paul, this is a little different than the type of film we normally talk about. Let me ask you, before we talk about the bigger questions that this film asks, before we talk about any little nitpicks we have, how did you feel about this film as a piece of filmmaking? And we'll do our usual preface, which is, this isn't really something that can be spoiled. This is news that's been happening in the world. But if you are someone that likes to go into a film unspoiled, unsullied, I would suggest that, you know, that we're going to spoil some stuff. So as much as one can spoil reality. So with that said, Paul, how did you feel about the film overall?
Oh, you mean we're not talking about the Beatles movie today? So I thought it was a good film. I was entertained by it. It was a little long, I thought. It went on one or two court cases too many for me. In the middle, it lost me with that. But overall, it was like plot wise and film wise. You know, we've talked about reality ish movies. Well, every vegan movie that we've done, right, has been more or less.
We have done no narrative films. They've all been documentary films.
And as far as those go, as if you've heard our other reviews, sometimes they just don't really have a exciting plot because sometimes life just isn't that exciting when the camera's on you. But this one, it had all these twists and turns as if it was like super duper exciting. But there was, you know, it's like
it was. You know, skiing back and forth. There were some turns, but no big like plot twist.
No big plot twist, but there were ups and downs. You already said you were going to spoil it. So kind of the big thing that keeps happening is Stephen Wise keeps trying to go after these specific chimpanzees to try. He's going after them. He's trying to free these specific. He's not going after them. He's trying to free
these. He's wearing a safari helmet the whole time.
Oh, no. He's trying to free these specific chimpanzees. And like right before the cases keep happening, these chimpanzees, unfortunately, they keep dying. And that happens, I think, two or three times. And I guess that's the main thing that like keeps, that's kind of like the twist that happens, is it's like he keeps doing this setup and then just keeps getting knocked down.
You feel like there's like a conspiracy.
Yeah, it really does. So that was kind of like the, you know, the excitement of the movie in the midst of a lot of legal happenings.
So you felt it was a compelling piece of storytelling, is what you're trying to say.
For the most part, yeah. Like I did say in the beginning, though, as a movie that is basically about this guy trying to set this precedent for legal cases, you know, there's not much.
Did you say president?
Precedent. This president, he's trying to make this chimpanzee become president. That's what the movie's about, right? He's trying to set this precedent. Is that better? It's a hard word to pronounce, Andy.
I think you're thinking of Dunstan Checks In.
What?
Didn't see that?
No.
Paul, you're so young.
You know, as there's only so much excitement can be had from like, and now there's a scene of them practicing the legal case, and now there's a scene of them at the legal case. So it's like, you know, in that sense, you get what you expect. It's a lot of legal terms. And he just showed me Dunstan Checks In.
I remembered him wearing like an Abe Lincoln hat, but
so the joke was poor, or else I would have gotten it. I was, like I said, I enjoyed it. It went on a little long. They probably could have edited a little bit of stuff. I was surprised at how much stuff that they could show. I was worried that it was going to be a lot, as the movie proceeded, it was going to be a lot of like, and we've been gearing up for this court case, and then they were just going to the court case and, you know, they wouldn't be able to film it or something like that. And I think there was only really one part where they go into, what was it, Stony Brook? The university?
Did they ever?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. There was only the one part where one of the women goes into there and they don't film it. And then she comes out and says like, oh, they were avoiding my questions about the two chimpanzees that they were researching. And I think that might have been the only part where they didn't have film access to something, which I was kind of surprised about. It seemed like the type of movie where there'd be more scenes of like, and now we're going to go to this place. And then it just shows them going in and then coming out and being like, and this is how this went. But they seem to have access in some surprising locations too. Like when they just kind of went to where one of the chimpanzees lived. And they just have this, I would assume, a pretty professional camera. And they just go up to the guy working there. And after talking to him for a little while, like, can we see the chimpanzee? And he's like, yeah, sure. And it seems like they get access to literally go into, because at first they're just kind of looking in the window.
Yeah.
But then they have shots of him like up close. So I don't know if they're like, can we just bring this camera in here? And the guy was probably like, I don't care.
They don't pay me enough to care. Yeah.
You want me to sign some papers? You can show my face. Boom, 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 boom. But I don't know. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think that, as you've kind of said, legal dramas done via documentary style, they don't have what we're used to getting from like a narrative film with these like big like moments where like a weapon is revealed or someone cracks on the stand. so these types of things are, because I would say, I want to say maybe half of the film is in a courtroom, because that is the narrative thrust of the film, is Stephen Wise and the Non-Human Rights Project trying to essentially obtain legal personhood, or something perhaps just shy of legal personhood, for some individual chimpanzees. So it's not a lawsuit. It's not a case where it's, once it's passed, that means every single chimpanzee out there has this legal personhood. But he explains it that it's just kind of the foot in the door. And I would definitely love to get to what we think of this strategy overall at some point. But
as we are both legal experts, so
yes,
we can.
Yes. So essentially, as a piece of filmmaking in a genre that is prone to being kind of dry, I found myself very engaged, yes, with this film. I found myself often lightly clapping. I had a big smile on my face a lot of the time. And when there's a moment when they're just kind of reading a legal document, which is going to reveal if they got a positive outcome or not. And I was like,
yeah,
are they going to get the thing? And so I think that the filmmakers did a really fantastic job of turning what is really interesting and fascinating at its core, but in how it has to be done, which is through very dry legal proceedings, they were able to turn that into a overall compelling piece of filmmaking. I agree with you, Paul, that there was, you know, towards the end, I was wanting to check my watch and I was like, okay, we've seen enough of this and like, let's get to where we're going. There's one point when I thought it was going to end and then it kept going for another 10, 15 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So they certainly could have tightened it up a little bit. I don't, you know, it's something that I'm like, would someone who wasn't really interested in this subject matter, this is obviously something of some kind of interest to the two of us, obviously. So I'm wondering if someone that just wasn't really interested in this, if they would feel like they had, you know, if they had made a good decision to watch this film. And I thought that visually it was fine. It was not one of the more beautiful films that we've seen, but it is certainly very competently made. And I felt that, like, overall, they were making good choices in how they were putting together the film.
Yeah. There's some cute chimpanzee shots.
Yeah. You know, Paul, I think I must have missed that Stony Brook thing because maybe that was when I was telling the people in front of us to shut up. I think we could have a whole separate podcast on movie theater etiquette. We were at a theater that was kind of distracting because there was this couple right in front of us that was talking at a volume that was like almost inaudible, but audible. And like, we're right behind them. And at one point I leaned over and I said, "Hey, could you please stop talking?" And the guy said, "Yeah, okay." And then they kept talking. Well, I think the one of them kept talking, and I think that the guy that I said, "Could you stop talking?" I think he was maybe embarrassed because he was not responding to her.
Yeah, I saw that. And speaking of distractions, and then there was also way up in the front, someone had what I could only describe as possibly like a chain or something like that.
I thought it was a burlap sack full of metal spoons.
Like, every once in a while, you just hear this like chain rattling around.
I'm pretty sure it was the ghost of Christmas past haunting the theater.
It was very loud.
The first time it happened, I thought there was a part of the film. It was like an awkward sound editing choice. And then also there was someone that was just scrolling through Facebook the entire film.
Really? Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Thankfully, that person's phone was blocked by the head of the person who was talking the whole time. So I was like kind of glad they were there. Otherwise, I would have been sitting with like my hand in front of the face so I couldn't see it.
Oh, I didn't see that at all.
The like 80% of the movie. I kept looking over to see if they were still on that phone. Anyway, I think that this is related to veganism because it's about being a decent human being. If you talk in a theater, if you text in a theater, if you rattle your chain and or burlap sack full of metal spoons in a theater, you're not a good person.
You're not a good vegan and you're not a good person.
Not a good human being. You're not a part of a functioning society.
All right, let's reel it back in. I just had to wrestle Andy back down into his chair. He was standing that entire monologue.
I grabbed a soapbox and I was standing upon it.
But I guess at this point we have our general feelings of it. I guess we can go into
We both enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
It was an enjoyable film. I think that if someone said they were interested in the subject matter, I could safely say this would be a good film to watch.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, Paul.
Okay.
Before we get into the bigger picture, and maybe this is part of the bigger picture, do you feel that the film and Stephen Wise within it, if you were not someone that had thought about this issue before, do you think it would have compelled you to fall on his side of this issue?
I mean, the way that the film was, you know, obviously the way the film was made, he's the good guy in this, and they definitely portray him as a like a very likable guy. I thought he always had these kind of like, I was like, oh, I want to hang out with this guy. He always, like, anytime any reporter or something would ask him a question, he always had sometimes witty, just like a very charismatic response to the reporters and stuff. I thought they made him seem they made him seem definitely out to be like the hero.
Let me cut you off though.
Yes.
That is not the question I'm asking.
Okay.
he is likable because I found myself as well going, this guy is a very likable person.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that I found him to be some great orator. I don't feel like his responses in media were like blowing me away. You know, that's an unfair burn for him because clearly he like knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like the like slick politician that you would kind of hope to be like the front person for this cause. I think that, but he was likable because that's what the narrative demands of a film. And that's sort of, you know, the language of the film is saying you're rooting for these people. And like there was times when I felt like I didn't necessarily know exactly what was going on, but I knew I was supposed to like these people and I shared in their joys and their sorrows. But I don't know that if I was someone that was uneducated on this case or on this general issue or animal rights in general, if I was someone that was sitting there thinking, well, why should a chimpanzee have the exact same rights as a human being? Which is not necessarily what he's arguing, but that was the misconception a lot of people. That's a lot of what he had to combat. Do you think that the film is a good way, is a good introduction to that issue to someone? Do you think that they would walk out saying, this film really presented a solid case for why chimpanzees and certain other animals like whales and elephants should have legal personhood?
That's hard to say. It's hard to say because I obviously have the bias of, like you said, like rooting for his cause. I think yes. I would still say yes, especially because it seemed like from the judges when he was bringing forward these cases, from the judges, the kind of criticism that he got from the judges, then the film said like, oh, well, this is silly because one of the judges dismisses the case.
Are you talking about the judge that kept cutting him off?
Yeah.
Talk about learning to when to shut up and like listening and reciprocity in conversation. This judge was not really interested in what he had to say.
But what was the like? That was the one that was like it was like 8 weeks later, and then they finally
turned it down because animals, chimpanzees specifically. They say that with legal personhood comes social responsibility. And since
the Spider-Man clause.
Yeah, since they came with great power comes great responsibility. That's why they turned it down. Because they're like, oh, they can't be required to like be a functioning member of society, so therefore they should not have rights.
Yeah, and then I think in the movie they did a good job of explaining, well, like that's ridiculous because it's like children aren't required to like have all of the responsibilities as a full blown adult, and people that might have like a learning disability or something like that aren't going to necessarily have all of these same responsibilities. And so it's like, I think they did a good job of responding to that. And then the second one was, I remember now, the second judge turned it down because they made the argument that you're really just taking the chimpanzee out of some confined area and putting it into another confined area that may be great. It may be like a resort compared to where they were coming from, but in the end, it's still some confined area. And because of that, they dismissed it. And I thought, again, they did a good job of saying like, well, it's like, again, if like this happens with a child or something like that, the child isn't just let off. If like a child is being moved around out of some bad situation, they're not just let out into the streets, you know, they're put somewhere else under the care of someone else. And it's more so about the fact that the chimpanzee in his current condition was not allowed to have this autonomy. He didn't really have the capacity to grow and flourish in the way that he could, and in the way that he could, even if he was in this other, it was a chimpanzee sanctuary in Florida. If he was there, like he would have the autonomy. He would be able to interact with other chimpanzees. So it's like, I thought they did a good job of responding to what were kind of like the main criticisms from the judges. And then another one of the big criticisms that he seemed to be getting from some of the judges, and then also there was a lot of clips of him on talk shows and stuff, was that he kept kind of comparing, and obviously I think this is going to be a big point of discussion, he kept referencing other cases related to slavery to bolster his case. And like both these talk show hosts and the judges kind of brought that up and been like, well, you can't compare, like you're comparing slaves to chimpanzees. And I think he did a pretty good job of responding to it, especially it was to one of the talk show hosts that brought that up. And he said then, and I mean, this is the kind of like, this is kind of like just kind of spoiling the strategy that he was using is that he was saying how it's like, he's more so using habeas corpus to as like kind of an avenue, that a legal avenue, like that he can take to get to the end point that he wants to get to, which is that chimpanzees won't be in these small confined areas, and that it wasn't really that he was comparing the two things, but he was using this kind of this legal like road that has been paved out before him, and that have people have used in the past. So I thought he did a pretty good job explaining that, because I was worried that, because he was doing a lot of comparing these two things, and that was one of the things when the movie was kind of getting into that I was like, oh, I don't know how he's going to handle this, and I think he handled it pretty good.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, I think the moment you're referencing specifically when he was talking to, he was on some interview on some talk show, and the host was said, yeah, I think you did a good job of explaining that, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of the things that he was referencing, he also referenced cases outside of the U.S. where legal personhood was granted to rivers and books and idols. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment in the film when he's in like the green room for a talk show, and it must have been some legal talk show, because the other guest that was waiting back there was a lawyer, and he put in his 2 cents and said, you should probably steer clear of those cases.
Yeah.
And maybe talk about personhood. You know, how personhood for corporations can apply more so than a river or a book or an idol. And perhaps it's just my own personal like bias, but every time he did mention legal personhood of a river or like a book or something, I was like, that would lose me. I think that would lose me.
Yeah.
I understand why he had to use those, because there's such limited, you know, cases for him to reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I, when those happened, I was like, I am fully on board with you. I think I'm fully on board with you. And that loses me when you do those.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right too. And I think it lost some of the judges too.
Yeah.
But it, like you said, it's tough though, when I can't even imagine. It's tough when you're trying to put something legal forward that has, as far as we know, and as far as the movie says, never been done before, you know? So it's kind of like you have to grasp at these comparisons, that they're not going to be the same, because there is nothing to reference that is the same. This is the first time that it's happening. So it's kind of like, yeah, they're bad analogies, but I mean, it seems like, again, not legal experts. This episode is sponsored by LegalZoom. Check out all your legal. We're not legal experts, but you know, it seems like when you're making these cases, you do have to reference stuff that has happened in the past cases that have been won, and be like, this case went this way. Like, this is how it's similar to my case, and that's why my case should go that way too. I feel like that's kind of what a lot of this legal argument, what a lot of these legal arguments are.
Yeah.
And again, since this is the first time this is happening, it's really hard for him to do that.
Yeah, he definitely has a monumental task ahead of him. That's for sure. And the film, I think, does a pretty good job of conveying, and maybe it's just because we know the reality we live in, but the film does a good job of conveying this monumental uphill battle that he has. And he admits that he doesn't expect to win a lot of the cases, and that's mm-hmm. actually part of their strategy, is to lose cases, so it has to go up to higher courts, which is kind of interesting, because, you know, essentially, if he wins those lower level cases, the specific chimpanzees he's working to get personhood for, they will be freed or moved to a sanctuary, which is a better version of freed, as argued by the film. But then that doesn't put the personhood issue on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. So if, in case you're wondering, in case you didn't see the movie, basically, like Andy was saying, like his kind of goal is to win these individual cases so that, you know, when more of them start coming up, he can just say like, well, this is just like that other case. And then hopefully that would win him the case. And then eventually it would get to the point where like there would be so many of these cases that they would just be like, you know what, this is just a thing now that we can say.
So I think that's probably a good place to start talking about what we think of this strategy overall. So this gets brought up in the film a lot, especially it gets brought up by the judges, but especially in a lot of like the legal clippings and film, you know, video clips that they show from talk shows and whatnot, is the slippery slope argument. And it seems that Stephen Wise knows he has to be very careful. Like, I don't know if he's vegan. I assume that he must be. They show that he read Animal Liberation and he's done all this work for dogs and cats, and obviously now for these other animals.
I was looking on his kitchen table when they showed the one scene, and I was like, is that Seitan over there?
Well, it looked like there was like a tofurkey roast at one point, but I couldn't tell for sure. But I assume that he must be. But I think that he knows that he is going to lose his credibility in court and in the public eye for a lot of people if he admits that this is a way to gain legal personhood for chickens and cows. And he explicitly says this is not what this case is about.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you asking, is that like a good strategy?
Do you think it's a good strategy? I guess so this is what I'm asking. Is this strategy good in the long run? Because in the short run, it sort of further serves to divide animals into intelligence as assigned by human beings because they can perform human tasks. And in the film, they show chimpanzees doing sign language or performing complex tasks, reacting to films and emotions and doing, you know, like number exercises. They have to put things in certain order.
It's very impressive.
It is. There was many times that I just wanted to like grab Paul by the shoulder and be like, look at that. That's, yeah. That's like so cool. Like yeah. I had not seen a lot of that stuff. And so, I mean, that stuff is exciting to watch. Yeah. It's just exciting because, you know, we have these assumptions that these animals cannot communicate with humans in the way that humans communicate with words or with sign language or something along those lines, or pictures even. And here we are, and not that this is like new information in the film by any means, but here we are witnessing that. And to me, that's like really exciting. But there is sort of this divide. And we talk about this when we talk about, say, like SeaWorld being targeted for the orcas, but not for other fish. Mm-hmm. Or an orca is not a fish, but, you know, other marine animals. And how that kind of, perhaps, while maybe good for orcas, is bad for animals overall, because you're just creating these dividing lines. And so I'm wondering if this strategy is something that is just like, well, yeah, there's some animals that are like a lot smarter, and they're chimpanzees and they're dolphins and whales, but we don't eat them, although they are clearly exploited. And we do eat some of those animals, but does it further cement that divide in a way that's going to be harder to, once those chimpanzees get legal personhood, are they now on this other side of the chasm with human beings, and it's going to be a lot harder to get chickens over that chasm because they can't fly?
I don't think so at all, because I think once chimpanzees get over that dividing line, it's like that opens up where before it was just humans, and now it's there is also, even if it's just one type of non-human animal, I think it's just opening it up. I don't see it at all as that. And I think, in fact, I think like right now where we are now, it would be like, even he says, like, it's unrealistic even to just go after a case that's saying all chimpanzees should have this right. Even if like we were talking about, even if there's a lot of evidence that says, you know, like they're very smart, they're self-aware, they're autonomous. Even though there's all this evidence, where we're at right now in the US, it would be ridiculous to try and bring that to court. So it's like he's starting at such like a very small, he's starting with one very small piece, with one single chimpanzee or a handful of chimpanzees. But I think he knows, and I think, you know, just because he knows more about legal stuff than we do, you know, I think he knows.
Are you sure? present your case for that.
I think he would know better about what is more realistic legally than we would. I think that we can definitely say. But even if we didn't just watch that movie, I would still probably agree with that tactic, because it's not realistic right now to say like, oh, someone's going to bring a case to court that says that animals cannot be like eaten anymore. Like that would not get anywhere. But you know, if chimpanzees can get some rights, and then maybe, and he even talked about this in the very beginning of the movie where he says like, I'm focusing first on like whales and dolphins, chimpanzees, elephants, like the apes and elephants. He's like, those are the animals I'm focusing on first. And I think he even says, it's like, those are the animals that we're going to be able to, hopefully we're going to be able to win. And then we can expand on that. And it's funny too, because I think I don't remember if he, because they did show a lot of like news clips and internet clips and stuff like that of news stories reacting to this. And I forget if he was actually on this one, but oh yeah, he was, because it was one of the guys saying like, oh, do you think like, but he, some guy was like, well, is it then going to be illegal for chickens, like for me to eat chickens? And I think he wanted to say like, I hope so, Stephen Wise, but instead he was just like, I don't know, maybe not in my lifetime, but maybe eventually it'll be illegal.
They showed another version of that question being asked, and I thought I liked his response at that moment because it seemed very strategic, and essentially he said, I think they're asking about cows, but he was like, who knows? I guess we would have to see what kind of evidence people could present for that, you know? And that I was like, okay, that's good, because that's sort of instilling confidence in the public that the reason he is bringing this forward is because there is evidence for it. And it's also just essentially just like applauding an attitude, a nature of inquisitiveness. And instead of like automatically shooting stuff down, he'd be like, I don't know. Like, if someone could present me with adequate information that, you know, pigs and cows should have legal personhood, I think that we should hear that out. And I thought that that was a very smart way to answer that question.
And I think also, I think that he is vegan. And I think he strategically did not say, he never said he was vegan. I think he strategically never said like, I think all animals should be treated one way or another. Like you were saying, the way that he responded, the press releases that he put out and stuff like that were all like him saying like, I only care about this one chimpanzee, but everyone knows it's like he has this, he's hoping it goes along this path. He's hoping for that slippery slope that I think other people are like, oh, I hope it doesn't become this slippery slope. And I think also because there's a lot of evidence saying how smart pigs are too. And I think he could have, intelligence wise, he maybe could have also included pigs in that list where he's saying like, okay, first I need to go after the apes, like whales, dolphins, and elephants. He probably could have included pigs in there too, but I think he knows that that will be much less likely to happen first just because of the, you know, of
the industry around
them. Yeah. And that, and people just in the general public is more sympathetic to apes and dolphins and whales and elephants than they are to pigs. So it's like, I think he is very strategic. And to answer the question that you asked like 20 minutes ago, it's like, again, I do think that this is a good strategy. And I think that this is a, from someone that doesn't have any legal intelligence, I think that this seems like a realistic strategy, which I think, you know, a lot of legal, you know, as vegans, we're trying to, as me, as a vegan, I'm trying to convert other people to be vegan. But, you know, there does also have to be this legal piece that happens. And I'm not going to be the person right now. I'm not equipped to be the person that makes those kind of legal changes. But as a person that is equipped, I think he knows kind of what avenue is going to be hopefully the most realistic and is actually going to see victories happen. So it's like, I think I agree with the stuff that he was doing.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you this. Shortly before recording, you were on the phone with, I think, your dad.
And my mom.
And mom. Paul's a good boy. and you said to your dad, oh, we just saw this vegan film. Do you think this is a vegan film?
I think it's a vegan film. Yeah, I think it is a 100% a vegan film that does not use the word vegan once, for a very specific reason, and that is so that it does not put people off that aren't vegan. I think it's playing on the fact, like I was just saying, it's playing on the fact that the general public is sympathetic.
Rattle your spoon, Paul.
The general public is sympathetic towards apes. Yeah. And I think that it's easy to win people over with that. And I think that's why he did it. He never said, once we got apes, then we're going to go after cows or something like that. Cause then I think that's when people are going to be like, whoa, you're telling me I can't eat a hamburger anymore. Like, I think he very purposefully omits saying, this is just me speculating. He purposefully omits saying how he actually feels about certain things. And I do think, I think it's a vegan movie.
I think I just disagree.
Really?
I don't think it's a vegan movie.
Why not? Present your
present your evidence. Yes, Your Honor. I think that it is a film about a strategy that is potentially, you know, an early step towards animal liberation of some kind. Who knows what kind? But I don't think it's a vegan film, and then it doesn't explicitly kind of advocate for the end of exploitation of animals. I don't think, and I wanted to ask you if this is something you would recommend for a non-vegan to watch. Yeah. We usually kind of talk about that towards the end of reviews, but I don't think that this would be a film that I would recommend to a non-vegan if I was trying to educate them on, like, animal rights in general. I think that the average person that has not thought about this issues is going to see this as something that's like, yeah, chimpanzees are really smart and they should be freed. And they showed this at the end when they're doing like polls, like 80% of Americans think, you know, chimpanzees should have the same rights as humans or, but I think this just kind of, and I'm saying this as someone who I'm pretty sure that I think this is an interesting strategy worth pursuing, but I don't think that it's going to be a film that's going to get people to change their mindset about animals in general. I know the case is about starting small and like building it up from there. So maybe it's like unfair to put that weight on the film, but in terms of saying, is this a vegan film? Is this a vegan maker? Is this a film that's going to, like, you know, push someone over the edge to go vegan if they've been considering it? I don't think so.
This podcast is over, Andy. I'm out of here.
Me and my spoons are out of here. Take your chain. Sully out the back door.
Also, sorry I've been coughing and sniffling this whole podcast. I am definitely getting a cold right now.
He's also wearing no pants.
Sorry about that, too.
That apology is more for me.
I don't know, because I think how this movie... You're right in that... This movie is...
Say that again, Paul.
And is smirking at
beautiful
me.
Music right here.
You're right in that this movie, if someone watches this movie, they're most likely not going to say, oh, I'm going to go vegan now because of this movie. You're right. But I think that in the same way that that we know that people, non-vegans, care about dogs and cats, we know that they care about the kind of, you know, those kind of the token animals like lions and like whales and stuff like that. And we know that we know this and we use that to try and we know this and
we're laughing about Paul.
Andy just picked up a single black bean and ate
it. It's all Paul fed me this evening. One black bean and I finally partook. I cut it up with a knife and fork though, so it made it last. Two bites.
We know that people are empathetic towards these animals already. And as vegan advocates, we can use that empathy and try and, you know, broaden their empathy and broaden their compassion to include all animals. And I think that this is a movie that it's possible to do that too. So I agree that this movie alone will not make someone go vegan, but I don't think that watching this movie will put someone further away from being vegan. And I think that it would allow people to have more empathy towards, even if it's just more empathy towards chimpanzees, they're still having more empathy towards animals. And it's kind of, I think, pushing them, even if it's a little step, it's pushing them towards veganism. So I don't, this isn't a movie that I'm going to be like, oh, bro, not vegan. You need to watch Unlocking the Cage right now. It's not going to be like that. I would say like, oh, hey, like I saw this movie, Unlocking the Cage. Like, yeah, if you want to go see it, you go see that movie. It's a good movie. But I don't think, you're right. I wouldn't say like, you need to go see this movie because you're going to become vegan.
So you said you don't think that this movie could push someone further away from veganism.
Yes, Your Honor.
That is correct. For the record, read that back for the record. Let me posit this, Paul. So one of the things that the film spends some time talking about is should... animals, in this case chimpanzees specifically, have the same rights as humans. And this is something that we deal with all the time as vegan advocates. When people say, oh, so you think animals should have the same rights as humans? And, you know, we say, well, we don't think that they should have the right to vote or, you know, marry who they want or drive a car or something like that. But we think that, like, to their...
The chimpanzee in this movie, the one in the movie would argue about that.
The one that drove a cop car?
Yeah.
I mean, that chimp was rad because it stole a cop car from a cop. So right on, chimp. But so what I'm trying to weave this tale here. What I'm trying to say is, this is an objection that we deal with as vegans all the time when people are like, oh, you think cows should have the right to vote? And we're like, no, we don't think that, but we think that, you know, they have certain needs, and to their needs, we should grant them certain rights, essentially. And this is a film that has someone going out there and being like, no, they should have rights. And for anyone that's not really looking at the nuances of these things, they just kind of see it as, oh, look at these, like, silly vegans. They're trying to get rights for animals. And I could see it as someone who perhaps had a slightly negative opinion of vegans, which is a good chunk of the population, watching the film. And even though the film, you know, the language of the film very strongly is like, you are on board with Stephen Wise and his team and you want him to succeed. But I could see someone watching that and not feeling engaged with the people on the screen because they're likable, but they're not the most engaging people I've ever seen in my life. And just being like, yeah, vegans are ridiculous.
Well, I think that what you're putting forth is something that the movie tries to argue against the whole time, which is, I don't think that he's trying to get chimpanzees to have the same rights as humans. He's trying to get chimpanzees to have one very specific right.
Do you think it's divisive to do this? Do you think it gets people talking about the wrong thing? Do you think it gets people talking about, like, this one specific thing and not talking about, like, animals as a whole? Say they were doing this legal case and it was, like, just totally under the radar and it was just, like, a thing that was kind of happening. But they're not just, and this is the nature of what they have to do, but they're not just letting it happen. They're going on all these talk shows. They're, like, making this the conversation piece. This is the water cooler topic. You know, on Monday, after everyone's watching Unlocking the Cage over the weekend. And they're talking about this instead of the overall general concept that all animals are deserving of their autonomy.
But again, I think it's just, it can be used as a stepping stone. And I want to believe that. And he's just scribbling stuff over there. It's very distracting. Could you quiet down up there, sir? I want to believe that people. I want to believe that people would be able to say, like, oh wow, like, I agree with this movie. Like, yeah, chimpanzees. They're they deserve this one specific right. And then I want to believe that people would be able to then logically make the next steps and being like, okay, I think, you know, also other animals, I guess, like, I guess if I think about it, I guess I don't want any animal to be in one of those, like, small cages, like, confined in those cages.
Yeah. But they don't have the same qualifications that a chimpanzee does, Paul. So why should we afford them that right?
I'm trying to think of something that the movie said that would rebut that.
I want you to know I'm not going to edit out any of this silence, Paul.
I don't know. I still think that it would allow, if it makes people feel empathy towards one animal that they maybe weren't empathetic towards before, it opens them up to be more empathetic towards other animals. And I don't have a reason why that would happen, but I think that it's possible that it could happen. And I don't know. I still don't believe that it's divisive. And legally, I definitely don't think that it's divisive, because I think getting one animal kind of afforded these legal rights opens up, like, the floodgates for just animals in general. I really believe that. But in terms of, like, for specific people trying to get them to be vegan, I mean, I think it's just about, like, if you're having a discussion with someone and you get that person to be empathetic towards chimpanzees, it's like, then you can, like, have that discussion with them and be like, like, oh, cool, you're empathetic towards this animal that maybe, like, you're feeling compassion towards this animal that maybe you didn't feel that before. Like, maybe before you only really thought about your dog in that way, or your cat in that way. And now there's this other animal, and you can kind of go along that path and be like, yeah, and this is why you should also, you know, there's no reason why not to feel compassionate about a pig or about a chicken or a cow or something like that too. And you're asking for like specific evidence of why, but I just think because it's like, you wouldn't want to inflict harm on this animal. It's like, what, you don't want to inflict harm on people. You know, it's just like, there's also these other animals. It's like, why would you want to just inflict harm upon them?
So do you think that perhaps this film could be something like a Cecil the Lion or a Harambe, in that we see people that feel empathy for this film, and then that is the opportunity for a vegan to kind of step in there, get their foot in the door, and have that conversation with them? Because I don't think that conversation is really necessarily going to happen unless someone else comes in there and like really kind of, you know, adds some fuel to that fire, plants that seed, whatever metaphor you want to use.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right, because again, I don't think the movie is going to be like that, because I really think that they were omitting a lot of purposefully. They were omitting pieces of how all of them feel. Cause I mean, like the people that were on the legal team on Stephen Wise's side, these were people that I would not be surprised. And I would be surprised if these people weren't vegan, maybe vegetarian too, but like, these were all people who seemed very empathetic towards at least the chimpanzees, but in a way that I was like, this would be, I was thinking like, this would be weird if these people weren't also vegan. Like, but again, maybe this is to your point that maybe they aren't vegan. Maybe they just really care about chimpanzees, but, I don't know. I want to believe that they were vegan, but like you said, I do agree with what you said, that I think that this can be used not on its own, but as a part of a larger discussion. But overall, and I think you said this, maybe I agreed with you before, but it's not something that I would just say like, watch this movie, it will turn you vegan. It's not that movie.
It'll explain everything.
So, Andy, I actually have a question for you. It's not a tough question. I'm going to lob you
objection.
One. because at the very beginning, at the very like the opening scene of the movie, where it's going through Stephen Wise's kind of history of he used to be a lawyer specifically for cats and dogs. I think
I thought you were going to say a championship stair racer.
Are we not going to explain that
nope.
joke?
It's a tidbit for those who have seen the film.
So who have paid very close attention to the film too, because it's just a little... I feel like you should explain that joke.
I don't think so.
Okay, all right. They will pay very close attention to the film when he mutters something under his breath towards the end of the movie.
It's late. We're getting loopy.
So in the beginning of the movie, it's explaining his background, and it shows this old picture, and Andy just leans over to me and he goes, see that guy on the left? That's Gary Francione. And I'm like, I was like, okay, I don't know. Andy is so much more entrenched in the vegan community than I am. So it's like, I don't recognize these people. I know some of the names, but I don't recognize them or anything. So my question to you, Andy, and then what are you doing?
You outed me as someone who talked in a movie theater after I just... I think the occasional utterance is okay.
I'm making an amendment to my... it's late.
It's half an hour past Paul's bedtime.
It is.
It's going to turn into a gremlin.
Don't feed me. And he's eating another bean over there. This is weird.
You were lobbing a question at me, Paul. Okay. Softball.
So, and then after we watched the movie, the one thing that we did talk about was Andy was like, oh yeah, remember that one, not Stephen Wise, but he was like, remember that other person that was in most of the movie? It's like, oh yeah, I know her. I've like talked to her before and stuff. And I was like, oh. And so my question to you is, how much of this did you know had already happened? Because I did not know any of it.
I knew most of it.
So it was all spoiled for you.
I mean, the last that I had heard was that it was basically not really going to happen yet. So the film ended on a much more positive note. Although the two chimpanzees at Stony Brook, right? They were like, they had filed a motion. No, where was Tommy? Tommy was Stony Brook, or no, Tommy was the...
Tommy was moved to the circus, I think.
Yes, yes.
Or a zoo. Sorry, Tommy was moved to... was
like
moved
a roadside
to
zoo. Yeah, yeah. And they said, that, you know, they filed a motion and they're like hopeful that he'll be released soon. But that was like filed last year or something. And that to me, I was like, that's kind of a downer. I don't feel very positive about the outcome of that case. But the film did end on a much more positive note than I had expected it to.
And I mean, of course, it's going to probably because they want to make it seem like this is working.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was actually knowing what I did. I was thinking it's interesting they're choosing to make this film now because as far as I had heard, it hadn't really gotten to anything that felt like a monumental victory. So narratively speaking, I mean, it feels like they've been making this film for years because they went back to 2013 earlier than that. And so I imagine the filmmakers were kind of just like, we need to put this to bed and just cap it off. And things are vaguely happy now and enthusiastic. And they did a really smart tactic at the end where they're showing all these clips and studies and things that are like, oh, the public believes animals should have the same rights. And for the person that is not on board, that plays to social norms, which makes someone want to conform to what everybody else is doing. And they're like, oh, well, if everyone agrees that animals should have the same rights as humans, then I guess I should as well. So that was smart.
Yeah. So you did know most of this, though?
Not the fine details of it, but I was familiar with a bunch of it and had, as you mentioned, I had talked to Natalie, who is the executive director. So I knew a lot of about their work and like what they've been doing before. So,
yeah, that's funny. I like, and for some reason that didn't hit me until later on. I was like, I bet Andy already knows all this stuff.
So, I mean, I still went in, you know, still being surprised, as I mentioned at the beginning of the review, I still found the film very, like, two notches below riveting, you know? Like, it was still a compelling watch. Yeah. It was a good sit, you know? And so it was still, like, I was still, and I'm also just a sucker, and I, like, want movies to make me cry and get excited and clap my hands and feel tense and scream at the person to get inside the house before the killer gets there. So, like, I'm prone to that. I just like for films to manipulate the heck out of me and make me feel feelings because I'm a hollowed-out shell of a man. But it still got to me. I was still excited by the mild twists and turns of the film. Lukewarm tension and drama.
Yeah, you kept being like, man, this guy, this team cannot catch a break.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. That's all.
Okay,
that's
so let's wrap it up with this question. I kind of asked it before. You would recommend the film to someone in a way that if they were already expressing interest, you'd be like, sure, go see it.
Yeah, I think I think so, which I guess now that you say it out loud doesn't sound very good. I think a vegan should go see it. Like, I think you would enjoy it, which is probably most of the people that's listening to this. So I would say, like, yeah, if you have the chance, go see it. If you don't see it, you know, you're not.
Do you have any evidence to support the claim that it's mostly vegans listening to this podcast, Paul?
I took a poll. Took a poll in Ibiza.
Yeah, and actually I do think that it might be a useful thing for vegans to see this film because it would acquaint them more with the arguments around this case so that if someone does bring it up like, oh, you see vegans just want rights for all these animals, you can argue it in the way that Stephen Wise did. I think it'd strengthen your knowledge, obviously, and it would strengthen your ability to talk about these issues. So in that regard, I do think it is a film that vegans should see.
Yeah.
And one that if there is a non-vegan who is interested in the subject matter or finds it intriguing in any way, shape, or form, I would say, yeah, go for it. I think you'll get something out of the film. And then make sure to follow up with them and tell them why they also need to go vegan.
Yeah. 7 stars out of 10. That's my rating.
That's the first time we've ever used some sort of rating system. Don't you feel like it should be like 1-inch beard, 2-inch beard, 3 beards out of 5? 3 beards out of 5.
I would give it a 3.5 beards out of 5.
I think I'm with you there. I think it's something that is, you won't be upset that you watched the film. Strong recommendation right there. All right. Well, let's leave it off there, Paul. Go see the film if you want to go see the film. We will not talk you out of it. Have you seen the film? This thing is not super readily available to people. We just happen to catch it. It's in, like, it's not even, like, limited release. It just happens to be popping up in theaters everywhere. So, good thing I'm saying this at the end of the review and not the beginning. But have you seen the film? Let us know what you think of the film. We crave your attention. Please send us emails. You can send us an email at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. You can always connect with us on our Instagram, which is, of course, just thebeardedvegans, and find pictures of food, get updates on when episodes have come out, and you can find all of our back episodes and comment on this specific episode you're listening to right this second at thecommentist.com. Paul, how do you spell that?
CommentIst.com.
And there is, of course, a the at the beginning of that website.
THE, commentist.com.
And yeah, head over to Commentist. Lots of good stuff happening over there, as well as a couple other really cool podcasts. And
what do you got coming up? Were you going to say something else?
I was like, what else do we have?
I really hope you post a picture of three and a half beards out of five beards.
Well, that would spoil the review.
I guess. We can post it. Oh, yeah, you're right.
A couple days later.
Yeah, a couple days later.
Okay.
So what do you got coming up?
All right. As we enter the month of October, October 15th and 16th, I will be at the Triangle Veg Fest in Raleigh, North Carolina. October 22nd, I will be at the Central Florida Veg Fest in Orlando, Florida. October 22nd, 23rd, I will not be there, but Compassion Company will have a table at the Boston Veg Fest. It'll be manned by our buddy Josh, who made an appearance on our Instagram recently. Also has a beard. He looks vaguely like Paul. People confuse him as brothers all the time, so definitely go and say hello to me or Josh.
And also, just so people know, I'm looking at the Unlocking the Cage website. It looks like the only screening they have coming up is the Hamptons International Film Festival, October 6th to 10th in East Hampton, New York. So if you're not there, you're out of luck.
All right, Paul, what do you have to say to these beautiful beardos?
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. Already blew his shot. I get along with old timers, cause my name's a reminder of a pop song people forgot, and I can't keep a girl. No.
When they're they said the two chimichan, the two
the two chimichangas,
chim chimery, chim chimery, chim chim chiru.